Okay, more questions. Nice thing about having an operation with only local anesthetics is that afterwards you come out feeling great. It's the anesthetics that make you feel sick afterwards. They're the ones that make you vomit and, feeling miserable and nauseated and so on. If you only have local anesthetics, it's really much nicer. Just a restful period. Yes, question. Why do we have myopia? Well, myopia is something we're actually going to discuss in some detail in the class. Why we have it? It happens because either the cornea is curved too much. The cornea is the outer part of the eye, and it focuses the light too quickly before it gets back to the retina. Or some people say because the eye is too long, and so the light focuses before it gets there, and the light that's focusing then spreads out again before it gets there. It's myopia. You can correct that with a lens, also called nearsightedness. Some people believe that myopia is actually an evolutionary development that allows people to be productive longer into their lives. Let me go through that real quickly. There are some people, as you get older, when you get to above 40, you'll find your eye doesn't focus very well. In fact, what happens is the lens in your eye, which used to be flexible, gets rather stiff. And so this happens to everybody. You lose the focus of your eyes. That's why you'll see older people wearing reading glasses. And that's because I can focus on you now. You're in perfect focus with one eye anyway. But up close, I have to add an additional focus to read things up close. If I want to do both, I wear it on my nose like this, and I look old. Otherwise, I look young, right? And the reason is because only old people go around like this, looking at you that way and looking down through this, because I can't focus my eye anymore. Actors have learned this. So the best way for an actor to look old is start wearing something like this. There's another thing you can do, and that is an actor. You'll see actors do this. I'll come to this again, but an actor picks up a piece of paper to read. They want you to look old. Now watch when I do the following. I'm going to make myself look even older. Watch this. So I pick this thing up, and I want to read this. So I go, I read it. That action is something all actors know. Because you think I'm older just because I went like, whoop. You think I'm older just because I went like this. The reason is you've only seen older people do it, people over age 40. Why? Because when you want to see something better, you go like this. They can't focus at that distance. Their eye focus is only at this distance. So when it's blurred, they can make it sharper by going back out. Now, some people believe that this develops in youth, that if you happen to be someone who reads a lot, or in ancient times, the craftsman works up close, that your eye focuses at this distance a lot, and when your focus no longer works, it stays at that distance, which means even past age 40, you can continue being a craftsman or a reader, whereas the hunter, who has to see things in the distance, is always focused at infinity. When they lose what's called the accommodation, then they can still see things at infinity. This is a theory of Sterling Colgate, a physicist, and it's hard to know whether this is true or not. But anyway, that's my story behind myopia. How are we doing on time? Time for another question before we start? Yes. Okay, the question is, when you're nearsighted with your youth, does it get better with age? Look, everything gets better with age, believe me. Okay, but no, your nearsightedness won't go away. What will happen is you'll still be nearsighted, but right now you're nearsighted. If you're nearsighted, a typical person who's nearsighted can read this but can't see things at infinity. But you have some range. You can focus from here to here. When you're a kid, you can focus here. You can look at your nose. You can't do it anymore. I bet you can't focus on your nose. The reason you can't is you've lost some of that accommodation already. When you were 3 years old, you could focus on your nose. You may remember that. I remember that. And then you lose that accommodation. So if you're nearsighted, your range is this from here to here. Great for being a craftsman. Okay? When you get to age 40, you lose that accommodation, and pretty soon it's stuck there. Now, what I did is I like to be able to see you guys and your smiling faces. I also like to go out to the jungle and see the monkeys in the trees. And I don't mean to make a comparison between the two. So I actually had LASIK surgery on my right eye, which gives me basically 20/15 vision at infinity. And then when I want to read, I wear my reading glasses. Okay? So don't worry, life gets better as you get older. Every way. Okay, let's get started. Today, because I don't really want to do too much because I'm supposed to be inactive, my doctor tells me, I'm not even supposed to work today, I'm supposed to use this as an excuse to take the day off. Means I would have to leave you in someone else's hands, and I don't trust anybody else. So I'm here anyway, but I'm going to take it easy. And one of the ways I'm going to do that is by showing a movie I show every year, but I've chosen to show it today. The movie's about an hour. And what I want to do is give you some lecture background material for the movie before I show it. So the background material is going to be about the accident at Three Mile Island. A couple announcements. Review sessions. There are two review sessions set up. A lot of you cannot make the Sunday from 12 to 2 because you like to hang around in church even after early morning services. In that case, go to the Saturday one. Some of you have services on Saturday, go to the Sunday one. So we're all set up for review sessions for the midterm exam. Best thing you can do is study hard before that. You all have been studying because you had to write essays. And so it's a great place to ask questions. Given the fact that I have to fill up an hour and a half without doing any work, it's absolutely a perfect day for a quiz. Yes, however, I'm not going to give one. What? Question? No, if you're going home for over the weekend, you will miss the discussion, these review sessions. So make sure you take full advantage of discussion sections. By the way, I don't think any of our GSIs mind if you show up at an extra discussion section. And there's nothing better than an active student who is really interested in learning the material. So you're welcome. You can go to your own discussion section. The Monday ones obviously aren't going to exist because Monday's a holiday. So if you're going to miss your Monday session, pick a Tuesday one or a Wednesday one and just go there, just to help in the review. Decided not to give a quiz today just because because the GSIs are a little bit overwhelmed with grading all the ones I gave recently. So after the midterm exam, I hope to post the grades again. Don't know yet. I'm beginning to think we're not going to be using the Scantron for the midterm just because we're having trouble making it work. And so we'll see on that. I brought this in to illustrate the chain reaction. So this is a mousetrap chain reaction. Well, the chapter is full of chain reactions, maybe the most interesting of which is PCR. We'll be talking about that on next Tuesday. The reading was due today. There'll be no new material on Tuesday, but I will be reviewing some of the things that I haven't discussed yet that are in the text, such as PCR, and how we have been able, 200 years later, to find out more about the relationship between Thomas Jefferson and his slave, and other little wonderful stories like that. The chain reaction is basically any reaction that takes advantage of the doubling law. So you start with one, then two. This happens in the nuclear chain reaction. The neutrons come out. Then 4, 8, 16, 32. Each one of those is called a stage. After about 75 stages, you're up to 10 to the 23rd. Every 8 steps, it's a factor of 1,000. A factor of 1,000. So if you double things, you can get from the microscopic numbers to the macroscopic numbers. Now, you know, here's the biggest secret of all. It's not much of a secret. How did Bill Gates get so wealthy? The answer is just double your income every couple years. You double, 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 and there you are, richest person in the world. Not hard. Trick is how to get that doubling working. Here we have a doubling thing. This is supposed to be analogous. So let me turn this thing on. How do I turn it on? There we go. Whoops. There it is. I have to let this ultraviolet light go on for a while before I demonstrate it. What do we have are mousetraps. And when a ball hits the mousetrap springs. Loaded on each mousetrap are two other balls. So it's like a plutonium nucleus or a uranium-235 nucleus. You hit it, and it releases its energy, and two more things come out. They bounce around until they hit another mousetrap. And you get two more, you get doubling. Now, here's an interesting fact about chain reactions. There will be in this thing, there are something like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, wait, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 times 7, 49 mousetraps. So the first thing is one mousetrap, and then two, and then four. These are the generations. 8, 16, 32, 64. Well, there aren't quite 64, but notice, it doubles each time. What that means is in each generation, you're doubling the energy coming out. What that means is if you miss one generation, you get half the energy. Imagine a nuclear bomb. If it has 75 generations, you release all the energy. If it has 74 generations, you release half as much. Of course, every generation you double. In fact, as I mentioned in the textbook, in every generation you emit as much energy as the entire previous explosions in each generation. That makes it rather tricky to predict the energy of a nuclear bomb. Anyway, we'll set this thing off in a few moments. Let me lecture quickly about Three Mile Island because that is in the movie today. Three Mile Island was the worst nuclear accident in the United States. It took place in 1979. The reactor was a, unlike the Soviet reactor, was a light water reactor. So you have the fuel. We'll draw a diagram. I'll start on this side. You have the fuel. The fuel are in zirconium capsules. And these zirconium capsules are supposed to contain the radioactivity so they don't get out into the water. So they do that. Then you have the water in the steel pressure vessel. Then you have the large containment building of concrete. And I didn't leave myself enough room. So let me open this side of the concrete up temporarily. The water for this gets hot. And that's where the energy comes from, hot water. So this water goes in and comes out. And then it comes through what's called a heat exchanger. It flows around like this. There's a pump to keep it going. And then you have other water here, which is also flowing around. This is called the secondary loop. This is the primary. And this water makes this water hot. Now, we have the concrete like this coming up. So none of the primary water actually gets out of the big concrete containment building. It's only the secondary water. The secondary water, the hot water coming out, goes into the turbines, which is basically a fan, and is expanded as steam to make the fan go around. The fan then operates the generator to make electric power. This water is still kind of hot, and so what they do is they send it up into a big cooling tower. And you've seen these shapes. They're famous. They're synonymous with the nuclear reactor. They're actually quite far removed from the nuclear reactor. All they are water cooler towels. So they have the water go up here and dribble down the sides and so on. And that cools the water. Actually, I think it's all contained. Then they let the water go back. So those are the cooling towers. But you'll see them in the movie. Now, what happened at Three Mile Island is kind of interesting and sad and pathetic and remarkable and amazing. Okay, at Three Mile Island, what happened was for some reason, this loop failed here. Nobody still knows whether it was an electrical failure or a mechanical failure. So this loop stopped running. Now, if this loop stops running, the heat is not taken away from this loop. Because you have to keep on feeding cool water in here to heat up. More cool water to heat up, but the water stopped flowing. And so this started getting hot. So what they do is they have a secondary exchanger. They have a whole other circuit that flows water. Let's see. I don't know whether it has a turbine in it or not, but there's a whole second loop that goes to cool the water. And this has a little engine to run the water. So when that happened, as soon as this one failed, there are two things that happen. One is they automatically turn off the generator. And secondly, they automatically turn off the nuclear reactor. What they do is they drop in control rods. So these are things that absorb neutrons. So as soon as it failed, the nuclear reaction turned off, the chain reaction. Okay, so these are called control rods. And that worked. So those dropped in, and the nuclear reaction turned off. They dropped in. Now, because this wasn't working, they flip on this one. Now, this one, in fact, had been inspected and had been tested just a few weeks earlier. And at the end of the test, you know, one of the things they do is they turn it off and turn it on and turn it off and turn it on, and everything checks out. Turn it off, turn it on, turn it off. Everything checked out. They flagged it was all tested. But if you notice what I said, they left it turned off. That is, they had this valve closed, so it couldn't operate. So the backup, because of the test they had done, and because someone had been careless in the checklist, was actually turned off, and this one didn't turn on. It took them a little while to figure out what was wrong there, the fact that this one didn't turn on. As a result, this thing started getting hotter and hotter. Now, there are some other things I didn't put in here. There's a pressure tower here that keeps the pressure constant. And as the thing gets hotter, the pressure starts building up. And so they have a little relief valve that lets the high-pressure gas come out to keep this thing pressured in the high-pressure water so the pressure doesn't build up too much because it's getting hot. So this relief valve opened and relieved the pressure, relieves it just a little bit. That's great. And then the relief valve closes, or supposed to. Turns out it got stuck. It didn't close all the way. So the pressure keeps on dropping. So you think the operators of the plant would say, the valve didn't close. Let's do some emergency procedure to close that valve. Except they didn't know the valve hadn't closed. Why didn't they know the valve hadn't closed? Because all that the electronics did is send a signal to the valve to shut and then inform the operator that it had sent the signal to shut the valve. There was no signal coming back saying, yes, I successfully closed. Turns out almost every nuclear reactor in the United States has a signal that comes back. But when they were making this plant, they saved a little bit of money and time by eliminating that detector. Well, believe me, after 1979, they don't save money and time anymore doing things like that. So that went wrong. So they didn't know what was going on. So the fact is the pressure was still dropping, but they didn't know that. Now you have hot water and the pressure is dropping. It begins to boil. And you get gas everywhere. But it's only by high pressure that you keep the stuff from boiling. So gas started accumulating in things called the heat exchanger, in the pressurizer. You start getting bubbles of gas. That bubbles of gas also confused their instruments, so they didn't know what was going on. Part of the big problem was they didn't know what was going on. Meanwhile, the water level began to drop. And so the emergency core cooling system came on. We talked about that last time. It's where they squirt, automatically started squirting more water in here because the pressure was dropping, gas was building up. You're getting the gas up here, the water level's dropping, so the emergency core cooling system comes on. An operator reading the gauge here, so the gauge said it was still full of water. We believe that's because of the gas formed sort of a foam, and a turbulent foam that confused that gauge, which had never been designed for a turbulent foam. So the operator says, what? It's still full of water, and the emergency core cooling system is coming on. Oh, it's making a mistake. Let me turn off the emergency core cooling system. So they turned off the emergency core cooling system. At that point, the bubble kept on growing and finally came and exposed the core. Things started getting really hot. It turns out about half the core was exposed. Now, as you know, the chain reaction stops because for two reasons. One is the control rods were in, but even without that, once you've lost your coolant, that's the moderator. And so it will stop. So there's no chain reaction, but there was still the residual radioactivity, the waste radioactivity from the fission fragments that were in these things. And so these things started to melt. And this got hotter and hotter and hotter. This was 2 hours in. Then at Three Mile Island, what happens 2 hours in? Well, they change the shift. New people come in. The new people came in and they noticed, wait a minute, there's something fishy going on here. They actually looked at some measuring things, looked at some of the thermostats, said, hey, this is way too hot. And they started going through things. Meanwhile, this pressurizer, the pressure up here, there's an overflow thing that it flows into. The water was flowing into this overflow thing. It got filled up. It popped a valve, a safety thing, and started spewing this water. Now, this water started filling up in here. This is actually fairly radioactive water because it has some of the gases that that are made, radioactive gases, radioactive xenon, radioactive, not sure which other radioactive gases come out. They come into this water, and so this water is radioactive. That's why they never let it out of the containment. So we started filling up with radioactive water. Finally, the water got to the point where it triggered some radiation detectors. People actually didn't understand all this until several years after the accident. About a third of the fuel melted. Meanwhile, the governor is trying to figure out, should he evacuate the area? This thing started filling up with radioactive gas. To get rid of it, they leaked the least dangerous radioactive gas to the outside. Here's an interesting policy thing. They concluded that if they leaked the radioactivity to the outside, it would minimize the danger and that nobody would get more than, well, what turned out was the most anybody got was 100 milligrams. That's the maximum that anybody was exposed to. The average was 8 milligrams. That's for within 10 miles of the reactor. And, okay, so 2,500 rem is one cancer, and 2,500 millirem, 2 million millirem, is one cancer. So these things were actually fairly low. In fact, you get 8 millirem if you go spend a couple of weeks in Denver. So this is the sort of Denver. Typically here we get 250 millirem a year. Denver has about 100 millirem more per year just because of all the granite. And the people who do this said, well, look, we don't have any prohibition on people traveling to Denver because of the increased radioactivity. Millions of people travel to Denver, and we don't prohibit them, so these levels must be safe. Anyway, they release them. If you do the calculation, you find about one cancer in the entire U.S. population can be attributed to this. Of course, we'll never know which one. Is that bad? Cancer is a bad thing. You have cancer that you wouldn't have had. And here in releasing this, they may have caused as much as one, not including all the people smoking and having traffic accidents because of that. So anyway, that's the issue. That's a public policy issue. That's what happened. They finally got this thing cooled off, turned the emergency cooling system back on. The stuff melted. None of it got out of the containment. It never melted through, even though a third of it melted. But, it's not the worst case scenario. This is reality. It's the worst nuclear accident that ever happened in the United States. Turned public opinion against nuclear reactors. After this, I don't think there were any new nuclear reactors that were licensed, although people are talking about licensing some, but maybe building them now, if that decision perhaps was a mistake. Okay, let me show this chain reaction. So can we have the lights off? Because I have this ultraviolet light on. It shows much better. I have light on. And I have here a neutron. And the light's really off. Off. Yeah, it's better. Can we get them? There we go. Now I have to look. So you can see those glowing a little bit. Do they show up on the screen at all? Well, since they don't show up on the screen, that's okay. You people at home can hear what happens. Okay, so now I'm going to throw in one neutron. Now what will happen, one neutron will hit one mousetrap. Two will come out. And then when those hit, four. And then when those hit, eight, and so on. And remember, half it happens in the last generation. I may be a dud. Maybe I'll miss with this first one. So let's give it a try, see what happens. Dud. Fortunately, I have another neutron. See, See, not, you know, some of these neutrons might leak out. And this is why in the nuclear bomb they start off with millions of neutrons by having the polonium, or by having, well, typically the polonium hitting a beryllium surface. So here, let's try again. You know, maybe it would work better if I turned it on. I just realized I forgot to. Let's see if I can. What happens is these mousetraps are designed to make it easy to set up. They all have switches on them. No, no, you can turn it off now. Okay, let's try again. Here we go. Nuclear bomb. Boom. Okay, you're all still alive. Lights back on. Okay, we're going to show the movie now. This was on a PBS. Let me just say, the guy who's narrating it is a man named Richard Rhodes. Richard Rhodes has written the best book by far on the atomic bomb project and on the hydrogen bomb project. It's called The Making of the Atomic Bomb and Dark Sun. If you really want to know the history of this stuff, it's the one book that Louis Alvarez said, this guy got everything right. For the first, it's the only book. Every other book on the subject has really major mistakes in it, but this one it really, I really enjoy this book a lot. On the Three Mile Island thing, there's one thing that really, there are a couple things that I find, lots of things I find amusing, some things I find annoying. One thing I find annoying is near, about two-thirds through, there is a supposed expert on nuclear power, and what he says is the reason we're compelled to have nuclear power is because there's a fundamental, I can't duplicate his words, but he just says it as if, God, you don't know this, you're not educated. We have to have compact energy. We have to have our energy that fits in this volume. You have to spread it out. It's just not going to work. I don't know why. He says this as if it's a theorem of physics of some sort. And this is what makes nuclear power inevitable, because it's the most compact energy of all. And I haven't been able to figure out why, where that comes from. I think he made it up, or he heard it from someone else, and it sounded good, and he liked the conclusion. Anybody want to comment on it? I'd say it's somewhat pro-nuke. I think what I... One thing I hope you got from this. Oh, there's a question over here to my left eye. Yes?
Comments are okay?
Yes, comments are fine.
So, two comments. One thing is that it seemed kind of ridiculous to me that they're talking about all the public fears about nuclear power when nuclear power was originally created to, or originally utilized to unleash the worst, most destructive weapon in the history of the world, and there are tens of thousands of these nuclear weapons running around. So, this kind of fear reaction, I think, is very understandable. I think that should have been more highlighted. Mm-hmm. Second of all, the whole discussion of sun and wind was just totally brushed over. And
I agree with the second comment. Other comments? I agree strongly with the second comment. The first comment, I think, was true. But the second comment was one that I also dislike the way they dismiss other forms of energy. Any other comments? Question, yes. Yes. Well, the question is, when you recycle plutonium, does it decrease the half-life? Basically, when you recycle it, you destroy it. The plutonium is destroyed because it fissions, and so you're left with the fission products. The fission products, some of them have a high half-life. That makes them dangerous. I mean, a short half-life because they're highly radioactive. They also disappear sooner. But it's a similar fission products to the ones you get from other nuclear plants. And there's a plot of radioactivity versus time that's in the chapter. Let me wind up with one general comment about this. I suspect that many of you found the following thing most surprising of all. You already knew most of what was in that show. Exam, a week from today.